This program is brought to you by Pussy Magnets. Putting men down in friends with a
Pussy Magnet. Welcome, welcome, my lovely lumps. Or should I say lovely labs? I'm so thrilled to have you here in the Labia Lounge. We're going to yarn about all things sexuality, womanhood, relationships, intimacy, holistic health, and everything in between. Your legs. Ooh. Can't help myself. Anyway, we're going to have vag loads of real chats with real people about real shit. So buckle up. You're about to receive the sex ed that you never had and have a bloody good laugh while you're at it. Before we dive in, I'd like to respectfully acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which I'm recording this, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. It's an absolute privilege to be living and creating dope podcast content in Naam, and I pay respect to their elders past, present, and emerging. Now, if y'all are ready, let's flap and do this. Oh my God, is there such thing as too many vagina jokes in the one intro? Whatever, it's my podcast. I'm leaving it in.
Don't panic, you're not broken. Your sex education was a piece of shit. Get your flaps out and pull up a couch. It's the Labia Lounge.
Hey, labial love lumps. Welcome back. Today we're chatting about the erotic blueprints with Dr. J. West, who has been trained by Miss Jaya, the creator of this cool sexuality framework or template, I guess. Let me tell you a little bit about Jay, who's actually been on the podcast before. I think Jay was one of my first ever guests way back when I started over 2 years ago. So feel free to go and check that episode out as well. But the rundown on Jay is as follows. The doctor with nine lives, from touring the world performing in fringe shows to running erotic blueprint nights, empowering women through eroticism and dance with the framework she created called Archetypal Alchemy, to a PhD in health psychology and exercise physiology. This mind-body nerd is a force to be reckoned with. So I'm so stoked to be chatting with you again, Jay. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always nice to have a chat. And what better way to like start the day talking about sex and pleasure and all good juicy stuff?
Totally. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, you're over in WA. I'm like, start the day, bitch. What time do you get up? But then I remembered there's a time difference. So that's allowed. That's allowed. So I guess I called it a framework. I don't even know if that's how you would explain it, but maybe let's give everyone a bit of a rundown, because like, I remember when I first heard about the erotic blueprints, and it sort of seemed at the time a bunch of years ago that it really exploded onto the scene. It became really trendy. And most people in my kind of world have at least heard of them. And so it's not actually unusual to be asked by a potential lover or something like that, like, what's your erotic blueprint? But I'm also aware that, you know, I live in a fucking bubble of people that are really into personal development and sexual exploration. So for those who haven't heard of the erotic blueprints, can you give us a bit of a rundown?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm beaming and smiling at the fact that it is starting to expand and starting to get out there, because that really is like a core intention of Jaya and the erotic blueprint team. Is a lot of people have heard of Gary Chapman's five love languages, which is a way that we mm-hmm. get our needs met in love and in connection. But the blueprints is specifically around our pathway to pleasure. And I will say that the actual framework is a lot bigger than the five types, which is what we commonly hear about. It's the five blueprint types. So I studied with Jaya for a year, and so her whole framework is a lot more comprehensive than just these mm-hmm. types. But the types always can give you these like aha moments, because really it's recognizing and categorizing the different ways that we communicate with one another. It's the ways that we can be conditioned, both positively and negatively. And it kind of gives us a roadmap of understanding maybe what our desires are, or what they could be, or where we want to expand into, and maybe where there's a miscommunication. So there's no such thing as incompatibility of the blueprints. It's just different communication styles, and the blueprints is there to give you a roadmap of how to navigate those differences in communication styles.
Awesome. Yeah, one of my questions was going to be about, you know, are there types that are more incompatible than others, and what do we do if we have different types? I'm getting ahead of myself. So can you maybe walk us through? So there's five erotic blueprints, and we can be like a combination of them. Usually we have like one main blueprint that, you know, our arousal kind of follows that pathway. Do you want to just give us a bit more specific around what the blueprint types are, and then I'll ask some follow-up questions from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I will preface with actually that we don't necessarily have one blueprint. Like, we're not locked into anything. It's not like this is what I am. You can actually, as you start to listen to me, and I'll unpack with each of the blueprints. So as you mentioned, yeah, there's five. What I'll talk into is what their kind of superpower is. So what are the mm-hmm. things that actually really allow them to dive deeply into pleasure? Doesn't mean that if you're not achieving all of those superpowers that you failed the blueprint. It's just things that can be accessible for them. And then I'll also talk into the shadow of each of the blueprints. And often people will resonate with the shadow first rather than the superpower. So don't think that that is abnormal if you're like, oh, that sounds like me. I'm only resonating with all the shadows. Very common for that to happen.
It's like that with personality tests and stuff as well. Hey, like I always relate to the shadow the most and go, oh my God. But you've kind of jumped ahead because I was going to ask about the shadow side and all of these things. But just to quickly go back to, there's not one type per person. These are obviously kind of flexible and transient, blah, blah, blah. Is it common? From my understanding, I thought it was kind of common that someone has like one or two more dominant types. Or is it kind of just, because otherwise, like what's the point of finding out what your quote unquote erotic blueprint is if none of them are, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So I will say that, yeah, some people can be conditioned into only being pigeonholed into one certain expression. And it may be more apparent when I like explain all of them. But why I say it's not always the case is me, for example, during my menstrual cycle, there's certain times of my phase where I'm very strongly energetic, and there's other times of my phase where I'm very strongly sexual. So as a human, like I might have different phases, or I can look at my past relationships and be like, oh, that relationship brought that particular blueprint out in me, because different relational dynamics will kind of influence each other. Me and my partner also, like, we theme date nights, or like chapters of our relationship might have themes, which over a period of time, you know, one particular blueprint may be more apparent, although we might be fluctuating between all of them in different moments. So let me dive into each of the blueprints, because then I can start to unpack maybe these different ideas or ideologies around them. So the five different blueprints. The first blueprint is the energetic. And energetics, people get aroused by anticipation. It's the tease and it's the subtleties of feeling a connection with someone that goes beyond the physical. So just that like sixth sense of like, oh, I'm supposed to be close to this person. I'm supposed to be connected to this person in some way. So that is their pathway to arousal. It's being able to trust and follow that little thread of synchronicity, or that little thread of awe and wonder, or connection with someone. And their superpowers with that means that they are so empathetic. They can feel their partner, whether that's the subtleties of sensations, or it might be the emotion. So if their partner is deeply in pleasure, they can feel it as if it's their own pleasure that they're experiencing. It also means that they can navigate when they're in that full surrender mode of being in their energetic blueprint. They can navigate their body and feel like they almost have this roadmap that instinctually allowing them to navigate the body and what to do next. and very empathetic. They will be able to sense, feel, and relate to the person, or really hold that beautiful space of witnessing and presence for a partner. So presence is really that, like, at their core foundation. They love presence, both to give and receive.
Hot.
But then the shadow. Yeah. And so there are some kind of like stereotypes that go with some of these. So if I'm looking at the energetic as a stereotype, people will get drawn, those kind of energetic people will get drawn to things like Tantra, Taoism, yoga, things that are a bit more ethereal. And sometimes, so even without this framework, you might find yourself being gravitated to these types of works because that blueprint is wanting to be fed. Now, the shadows of the energetic, because they are so sensitively wired, like their nervous system can pick up on all of the subtleties of energy around them. It means that they can be very, very sensitive physically. So someone goes to like straight to the genitals without that real like opening and that permission to soften. It's like this light switch that's all of a sudden turned off. And it's like, I was turned on and then I've kind of my whole system's short circuited. Now that can happen through touch. It can happen through language as well. So if someone's too direct or uses a tone that isn't maybe compatible or is jarring, it can almost be too startling for the nervous system for energetics and emotionally. So they can have a predisposition to take things a little bit more personally. And I'll use the example of say your partner's come home from work and they're a bit distracted and you're trying to, you know, have that presence and that moment of connection. But your partner's off in like their to-do list of maybe something's happened at work that's on their mind and hasn't communicated that with you. So all you're sensing is a kind of disconnection. They can start to take it personally and think they've done something wrong, or maybe they're not wanted anymore, or maybe they're not loved anymore. So that without that open and honest communication of when their partner's feeling distracted, there can that be that predisposition to take things more personally. Which can also make them retract or go into like a shell of self-protection or flight. They can leave. The last thing that I will say, and there are a lot more, but I'm just going to give you this little like snapshot of each one. The other thing that can occur because the energetics are drawn to things like yoga and Tantra and Taoism, there can be a hierarchy complex that can start to come up of like, oh, you know, I can move energy through my body and, you know, I'm enlightened with all of these incredible principles or these practices. And it can almost start to judge some of the more primal or animalistic style of relating or sexual interactions. And so it's just something to be aware of, that there can be more judgment or like hierarchy complex that can kind of sneak in when you go too much into the energetic blueprint.
I've definitely seen that in action. Yeah.
Yeah. So the second one, you're sensual. So sensuals are people that love all of their senses being indulged. So it's the people that will wear really soft fabrics or silky fabrics because they love the sensation on their body. They'll have like their own oils or smells or maybe different oils burning or incense burning. They love their like area or their space to look aesthetically pleasing because they like that visual stimulation. They're the people that, you know, you'll be eating a chocolate cake together and they're like, oh yum, this is so good, you know. So they're very vocal and they I'm talking in that like fully liberated and healthy expression of it. So yeah, all of the senses, that's their pathway to pleasure. Which means in terms of their superpowers, they are so connection based and they're so sensation based. So, it's not necessarily an end goal. It's connection based. So cuddling on the couch and having those romantic conversations or vulnerable conversations and connection based activities, that for them is just as arousing and fills up their cup as much as what having maybe penetrative sex, might be. And I say penetrative sex as an example. The blueprint is appropriate for all styles and sexualities and all relationship styles as well. So even if it's not a heterosexual relationship, these blueprints relate to any kind of sexual relation styles. So the essential, also, like, if I think about the blueprints in terms of different styles of, like, movie genres, this is your typical rom-com. Yeah. So you're going out for romantic dinners together. You know, it's, having flowers and chocolates. That's my particular, like, I'm so sensual. Like, I love being romanced. It's like, make me feel special, make me feel like I'm a princess. That's definitely me. But I will say, I was talking to a friend and explaining the sensual blueprint, and she was like, oh, nah, that's too prissy for me. But the more that we started to unpack that together, you know, she was like, oh, yeah, you know, I love, like, tight-fitting bike shorts that, you know, I've bought, like, a fun print on them. And we started to unpack it more, and it was like part of it was the sensations of, like, really being hugged and felt and, you know, tight next to the skin. And that compressive touch is actually still essential. It's just a different form. And the romanticism is relating to your particular identity. So it doesn't need to be presenting in a feminine or girly way. It's just, what are the actions that you can take for yourself or a partner can take for yourself that makes you feel special or, like, romantic in your own form and own way? So we'll say that the sensual blueprint does go in different expressions. Now, the shadow of the sensual, though, is if you're not in your body and if you're not in your pathways of pleasure, which is sensations, then you're likely in your mind and in your head. And two of the pathways that I typically see that are sensual, which will take them out of the body, is either external factors, and this can be environmental things. So one of the examples I give is, say, you know, you've decided to put a playlist on and you're making love with your partner or your lover, and all of a sudden the song comes on and you're like, oh, I'm just not in the mood for this particular song. For some blueprints, that's not even going to phase them. Like, the song is just something that's happening in the background. But for essential, it's like if they're then made aware of that, they're then going to be in their mind of, oh, okay, I think this song is about 4 minutes long. Okay, we're at the first chorus. There's only about another, okay, I need to get through another chorus and da-da-da-da. And meanwhile, your presence is disconnected. So you can imagine if your partner is an energetic, for example, and you've gone into your mind and disconnected from your pathway of pleasure, all of a sudden they might be starting to take it personally because they can tell energetically that you're distracted because you're off in your mind rather than in your sensations. So these are these examples of just miscommunication in the blueprints, but what can then actually grow and grow and grow into this catalyst of communication breakdown. The other external thing that can happen is stress. And stress can take us out of being in the body so much. So it might be about creating, you know, rituals or ways to disconnect. Like, what are your stresses? Can I put that to the side to actually really be present and in my body, even for, like, a small period of time, to actually allow yourself to unwind?
Yeah, I've always resonated the most with the sensual type, like, very sensitive to sensations and textures and very tactile and, like, love romance. And, like, yeah, those contextual factors are, like, make or break often with, like, intimacy, like, you know, the temperature and the soundtrack and the smells and, like, you know, massage, you know, the physical sensations, like, that's very important to me. And that really does kind of, like, either, yeah, open up my pathway to arousal or shut it down. And I have to really actively go, okay, what are the factors that are interrupting, you know, me or distracting me? And, like, how can I minimize those or create an environment that's more conducive to my relaxation and my presence and therefore allows me to, you know, unfold into pleasure? Yeah, the sensual and the energetic are both quite, those are the ones I've always resonated the most with. So, yeah, super interesting hearing about this.
Yeah. And we'll come back to that because that is a conditioning from society that women in particular usually get conditioned into those particular blueprints. But we'll talk about that maybe at the end when I've explained all of them.
Yeah.
The other side of the things that can take you out of the present moment for essential is the internal things. So body image is a big one, of not feeling comfortable or safe in your body and allowing yourself to just be in that free form expression and sensuality. And the other one is like obligations or expectations. And a big one being like, do I need to come? And the little, whether it's spoken about or not spoken about, there's sometimes this like line in the sand of, say your partner's been giving you lots of pleasure and, you know, you're in this beautiful receiving mode and it's all yummy and juicy. Then all of a sudden there's this line in the sand that you cross over and it's like, oh, they've spent too much time on me. Oh yeah. No, I don't think I'm going to come. No, I'm not going to come. And da, 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 da. And then you're completely out of the receiving mode and going further and further away from your pleasure because somehow there's been this invisible agreement that you need to come or you need to orgasm to be able to receive pleasure. And so sometimes it's just about having those honest and open communications around expectations or obligations and giving yourself permission that orgasm is not the end goal. It's great, but it doesn't need to be. No one's failed at anything if you're not reaching climax. So sometimes having those conversations allows you to kind of soften and receive more deeply, without that fear of like, oh, what are they going to, what's my partner or my lover going to think if I don't orgasm? So that's your sensual. Your next is your sexual. And your sexual, is maybe how we stereotypically see arousal, maybe more for men because it's very orgasm focused. It's genital focused. It's nudity focused. But it can often have a really, a bad rap to it. Like it's superficial. But actually, when someone is really deeply embracing their sexual blueprint, it's just being really in touch with that animal primal part of us that gives ourselves permission to have desires. And there's something so beautiful about that. And when you can actually rewire this idea that, you know, if someone else is a sexual blueprint and desiring you, how much that is a compliment. Because the sexual blueprint can go from 0 to 100 so quickly. It's like the subtlest thing can like put them into sexual mode and to sexual wiring. So it might be like even just like starting to undress, or maybe it's just a flicker in the eye that's like, oh, is this on? Maybe it's on. And this is something that I had to heal really deeply because I come from a dancing background where, you know, me as a woman was objectified and sexualized in this kind of space. And for a long time, I thought sexual, was unsafe or sexual was only objectifying rather than seeing it as a compliment. And sometimes it's about growing our voice, and trusting our voice can then give us permission to really explore the sexual blueprint, both on the receiving and the giving side. So the sexual blueprint is that like animalistic primal exploration, and it's uninhibited. It's this unshackling, and it's so innate to actually all human beings. The shadow of it, though, is that there can be a lot of shame around thinking about sex a lot of the time, looking at people with that intrigue of sexuality or primal relatability. And there can be a sense of failure. So for the sexual blueprint, like sex and sexuality is wrapped up into their sense of identity. So when someone says no to them, or no to us, like sexually exploring with them, even if it's within a relationship, if a particular night partner comes home and is like, no, I'm tired tonight, there is a sense of like that no is harder to hear sometimes because it's wrapped up in their identity. And they can feel like they've failed if they're not having sex regularly. It can also mean that they have a fixation on orgasm. And if they don't orgasm or if a partner doesn't orgasm, that they've failed their partner or if they've failed themselves. So this is an important, communication thing to be aware of, because as you can see, if a sensual and a sexual are dating themselves, like dating each other, the sensual doesn't want to focus necessarily on the orgasm and needs to relinquish that orgasm is the end goal. But the sexual also needs a sense of certainty that they haven't failed if they don't reach orgasm or if their partner doesn't reach orgasm. So it's just about having that communication with each other so that both parties don't walk away feeling like they failed or are triggered. The sexual blueprint can also have a predisposition to watching a lot of porn because they are very visually stimulated. They love like looking at nudity. It's about that self-expression for themselves of seeing different naked bodies. And it doesn't need to be, you know, the cookie cutter vision of what we see sometimes in porn, but because that's their visual stimulus a lot of the time, they can be kind of pigeonholed into thinking that's what bodies need to look like. So it can be a rewiring sometimes of the sexual going into embracing all forms of and shapes and forms of bodies. And when they do go into that, they can often find it very liberating and that they can really appreciate all forms of bodies. Your last, the next blueprint is your kinky blueprint. And I love the way that Jaya defines kink because for her, kink is anything that's taboo for you. So for one person, having sex before marriage because they've grown up in a religious family could be an element of the taboo, and it could have an element of kink to it. For another person, it could be more of how we might stereotypically see kink, which is BDSM, shibari, role play, you know, dominance and submission styles of play and role play. And I will break into kink into two areas as well, in that it can be psychological. So that can be creating different power dynamics, whether that's fantasy play, sub and dom play, or role play in any form. Or it can be physical kink. So it can be things like scratching, impact play, compression or restriction play. So you can be both, or you can just be one or the other. So it is something to be like aware of that, being kink doesn't mean just jumping straight to maybe how we stereotypically see kink.
And just to clarify for people, restriction might be like choking, compression might be like, you know, a lot of weight on, is that kind of what you mean? Just for those that
aren't familiar with it. Shibatsu being tied up. So yeah, having like handcuffs and being tied up, or being tied up with ropes, or there's many different things that can tie you up.
Beautiful.
But it can also be the games associated with it. So, you know, you could have a partner tied up, and if you're bringing the psychological play into it, you might be like, oh, you know, if you're able to get out of these ropes in the next minute, you can lick any part of my body that you want. Could be an example of bringing into the psychological play as well as the sensation play of actually liking the sensation of being tied.
Yeah, gotcha.
So these people are very creative, whether it's like fantasy play and exploring the possibilities of what the mind can create, or if it's sensation-based, it's like the first time that I ever did like a sensory like deprivation workshop, and I was like, cold chains, like if you put chains in a fridge or a freezer and you drape them over the body, it's like it's like, whoa, like this is not a sensation that I would have like necessarily related to sexuality, but it really awakened, you know, different tactile sensations in my body. So, you know, they look at everything in life and they're like, oh, what would that feel like on my body or for a partner? Or, you know, what kind of role play or dynamic that we could we create with this idea or this vision? Or how could I use words in a different context? So very, very creative. They're usually very versed in consent conversations, and they're able to speak up and own what their desires are as well as what their boundaries are. And this can be particularly important or good for it, sometimes an energetic to actually play in kink spaces, because energetics can sometimes have weak boundaries because their sense of the choices are governed based on what their partner wants a lot of the time. So because they're so empathetic, they can feel the hurt or pain of another person, and saying no to someone is sometimes more painful than just going along with what their partner wants. So sometimes using a kink pathway can be a really healing modality. And so that's why I said at the beginning, yes, we can have a particular blueprint, but we can use elements of all the different blueprints to heal parts of ourselves. And so that's where it can open or unlock different expressions within us.
And it also feels as though like there's kind of overlap, like when you're talking about kink and the sensations of like the cold chain and things like that. I'm like, well, that's very sensual as well. Like that's a physical sort of sensation. And then you've also got the psychological kinky element of like, these are chains. So I feel like there'd be some overlap there. And like, yeah, I love what you said about taking a leaf out of like one of the other blueprints books, because yeah, with energetics, I've definitely found like they prefer to just like communicate with no words and it all just to be so nonverbal because they're so sensitive to energy and intuition and things. And I'm like, cool, but also you have to learn the skill of verbal communication because you can't rely on nonverbal all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that you say that overlap. So that is a really good thing. So if you're really energetic and you're interested to go into kink play, then you might be looking at the psychological like realms. Like what if you're instructing your partner to go stand at the side of the room and take their clothes off, and you're instructing them from afar, because then you're going to start to feed that energetic of anticipation and being in control. You know, but you are starting to go into that power dynamic, versus if you know you're very sensual, then yeah, you might go into the sensory deprivation side of kink and the different sensation based and more of the physical side of kink. So knowing, yeah, where those overlaps start to occur can give you like, what's your entry level, or what might be the compatibility to then unlock maybe different ways of expressing yourself. And I can come back to that because, me and my partner were completely opposite blueprints, and over time kind of use different blueprints to unlock new parts of ourselves. So I'll come back to that once I've explained all of the different blueprints. So the shadow of the kinky is that because it's something that's not as talked about or maybe shamed in our society, they can not feel like they are deserving or that they shouldn't actually express what their wants, needs, and desires are. And they can actually even kid themselves or hide it away from themselves because of a fear of like, what if I get ostracized, or what if I get shamed for what my desires might be? So creating safety and, you know, allowing someone who's wanting to explore the kink a space of, non-judgment, just to express what they might be desiring, doesn't mean you as like a partner, if your partner expresses maybe a kink desire, doesn't mean you need to say yes if it's actually a no in your body, but giving people a space to actually express that, you know, that part of themselves that maybe they've been repressing or shaming internally.
Hey, baby babes.
Sorry to interrupt. I just had to pop my head into the lounge here and mention another virtual lounge that I'd love you to get around. It's the Labia Lounge Facebook group that I've created for listeners of the poddy to mingle in. There you'll find extra bits and bobs like freebies, behind the scenes, or discounts for offerings from guests who have been interviewed on the podcast. There'll also be, hopefully, inspiring, thought-provoking conversations and support from a community of labial legends like yourself. My vision for this is that it becomes a really supportive, educational, and hilarious resource for you to have more access to me and a safe space to ask questions you can't ask anywhere else. So head over to the links in the show notes or look up the Labia Lounge group in Facebook and I'll see you in there. And now back to the episode.
So yeah, with the kink, they can have a habit that starts to become all consuming. So it might be, oh, you know, I only want to be tied up, you know, and that's the only way that I'm going to be able to receive pleasure. And so their kink can start to become like narrowing in their ability to receive pleasure. So it's just something to be aware of. The other thing is that it's not necessarily a negative. The last thing is that it's not necessarily a negative thing, but just something to be aware of is that it is the blueprint that does need education around it. So if we're talking psychological play, you know, if you're working with like dominance and submission or humiliation play or anything like that, you just actually want to be informed and aware so that you're creating a safe container for both yourself and a potential lover or a lover and partner. Because we don't want to traumatize each other. We want to like create a space which can actually heal some of the things that have maybe held us back in our sexual expression. And kink definitely does have that capability to rewire and unwire things that have been traumatic or repressing to us in the past. But yeah, we just want to be educated in that, both psychologically and then also physically. So yeah, if you don't want to be doing impact play, you know, around vital organs and things like that, or there can be nerve damage and with shibari and so just please get educated. And that doesn't necessarily mean doing a YouTube video. That means getting actually educated by professionals in person so that you know what you're doing.
Because it's also like, as you know, I'd imagine the most misunderstood blueprint as well. And that also, I mean, you need the education to conduct yourself in a safe way and protect yourself and others. But then there's also like an education piece required for a lot of people who just kind of don't get it or misunderstand it or are really freaked out by it. And there's a fair bit of, I guess, judgment. I mean, it's the taboo, right? So of course there's stigma and there's judgment and there's assumptions. And so people often need to be educated on, you know, what a certain, like I come across this with clients who are kind of like, fuck, it's actually so much harder to find, I mean, if they're not in kink and BDSM communities and spaces, it's harder for them to find someone who has kind of an understanding and potentially compatible kind of kinks. And that thing you said about it, sometimes like the shadow side can be that it can get a bit limiting. Or just kind of narrow your, the scope of what can turn you on. Like I've definitely had people who are like, oh my God, like the only thing that does it for me is like a cuckolding, scenario. And it actually ruined my relationship because I couldn't get hard and I couldn't actually like stay with my partner in the end because, you know, it wasn't really her thing and she tried for my sake. But then, you know, so there's people who I've spoken to that have been lamenting the fact that they've gotten so kind of maybe obsessed or fixated on a certain kink or fetish that nothing else works for them at that point. So yeah
absolutely. And it's something I don't think that's talked about enough, like honestly and openly. And it's sometimes about going back into the curious phase, if we have pigeonholed ourselves into that area of like, okay, well, maybe let's open up the capacity again and see if there's anything else out there. And there's actually a lot of lists out there. If people don't actually know what they're interested in, there's all sorts of different consent checklists and activities that are out there that you can actually go through together and be like, what does my body respond to? What might be something that I'm interested in to do? What am I willing to do? And what do I not want to do? Because then you can start to map out with a partner. Maybe there's something that you both really want to try. Maybe there's something that your partner really wants to try or something you want to really try, but your partner is just kind of willing to do it. So it's more so for your pleasure. Mm. And then what are the things that are no-go zone? So there's like, yeah, there's so many activities out there. It's kind of like these human bodies are like playgrounds, really, where you've got so much capacity to go exploring. It's fun. There was something I was going to say on that as well. Oh, the other thing that I will say, which is a nice activity to do, if a partner has expressed that they have a kinky element or a kinky desire, what you can do in a partnership, because if someone is maybe not educated or maybe scared or intimidated of what kink might mean, is actually doing something called a dyad, where you sit in front of your partner and you might put a timer on, say for 2 minutes, or you can have more or less. And one person, the person that asks the question goes, what does kink mean to you? And your partner just needs to reply. They say an answer, you say thank you, and you repeat the question. What does kink mean to you? And you just keep going with that so you can start to unpack together what kink actually means, because kink does have the most diversity in its definition. You know, so kink for someone, as I mentioned, might just be, you know, they've had this reoccurring fantasy that they want to dress up. You know, that literally could be they have no interest in any other expression of kink. That might be the only thing. And that might be something that, you know, both partners are really willing to explore. Or there might be, one desire might have a whole heap of other desires associated with it. And then it's just about finding what are the common grounds that you and your partner are interested to explore together. And maybe what are the ones that aren't as of interest. So that's a really good exercise to do together.
Right.
The last blueprint, the shapeshifter. Now, the shapeshifter is when you are strong in all four of the other pathways. So you might have resonated with one or two, but the shapeshifter is like you do resonate with all of them, which means that you have all the blueprints, so all the superpowers accessible, and you also have all of the shadows accessible, as well as a couple of other shadows. So you can have a tendency to people-pleasing. So say if your partner is only strong in one or two of the blueprints, you can start to ignore the other parts of you and only have sexual interactions which fit the needs of your partner. And it can kind of lead this sense of restlessness or this seeking external to the relationship or resentment sometimes when those other needs aren't getting met. And it can also create a lot of confusion. So for yourself, what turned you on one day might not turn you on the next day. And that can actually become quite frustrating sometimes, especially if you're just starting to claim your voice and your capacity to ask for what you want, because you've just mastered what you want. And then the next day it might change. And it can also be really confusing for a partner because they can be like, oh, I know what my partner wants. And then the next time they try, you know, that might annoy them or piss them off, you know. So it can be something very confusing, and it's very reliant on open and honest communication. So that's something that the shapeshifter really needs to cultivate. And Jaya and both myself, believe that we might all come in as shapeshifters. And then through our life and our conditioning, either positive or negative, we get conditioned into certain blueprints. So the end goal is not to go, oh, I need to get back to being a shapeshifter. You might listen to this and by the end of it be like, yep, I'm definitely a central blueprint, and I actually have no desire to be anything other than a central blueprint. That is totally cool and it's so beautiful. Now you have the roadmap of being able to ask your partner what you might want or need to get your cup filled. Yeah, so it's just about how do we honestly and openly communicate with one another of what our desires actually are and have a roadmap for that. So when I talk about positive and negative conditioning, you know, there's positive conditioning in terms of, say, the example of essential. So I went to an all-girls school. So we're all around, all women openly talking about, like, sex and play. And I, to be honest, I was only dating women for most of, so up until my mid-20s. And so there was an element of femininity or sensuality of being around women that really connected and made me feel really sensual and really feminine. And being with women made me feel really feminine. So that was positively enhanced in my upbringing. And so I had positive connotations with the sensual blueprint of connection and being around women and sensuality. Versus when I started dancing in the nightclubs, as I mentioned earlier, I was objectified and sexualized, and that became unsafe. And so the sexual blueprint, I actually started to like push away, and it had connotations of being sleazy or only being an object or being disposable. And so I kept that away from me for a very long time. So, you know, that can be the negative conditioning. So that's individual experience. And then we talk about like societal conditioning and how females get encouraged to be, you know, energetic and sensual, and men get conditioned to be sexual and have that like lads culture. And so you get shamed if you're actually outside of that. If a woman really is embracing and maybe sleeping around, you know, they're seen as a slut or a whore, and kind of ostracized from the other women. And for men, if they're too in touch with their emotions, or if they have interest in going into like tantra or energetic things, you know, they're a sissy or they're a pussy, or they're almost emasculated for having that part of themselves. So you can see that sometimes we get through society conditioned. We have parental conditioning as well of what we should or shouldn't be. We have cultural conditioning of what is and isn't allowed. So, yeah, there are so many factors that kind of influence and shape our sexuality, and it's about creating these honest conversations where we can unpack it together in this safe way, so that sexuality then becomes a choice. It's not by the end of this, once we have all options on the table, that we have to do everything. It's just being able to come from a space of choice rather than obligation from our conditioning.
Yeah, beautiful. That was definitely one of my questions, was around, you know, what creates these arousal templates? Like, is it nature? Is it nurture? Is it a combo? And can we change or like expand our erotic blueprint? Because I guess something commonly that happens, and why it's really important to ideally start to understand our arousal pathways and blueprints through this lens, is in terms of like relationships and I don't want to say incompatibilities, but like ways that we are kind of just like ships passing in the night. And it's similar with love languages, right? Like, if you understand the other person's love language and how they give and receive love, even if that's different to yours, you can still be more adept at meeting in the middle and making sure you are more conscious around like how you behave in that relationship, so that they feel loved and so that you're also getting your needs met and feeling loved. So like with that in mind, like what is your approach when, you know, you come across a couple and you're in one where your erotic templates are really different? And I bet that sometimes might look like a discrepancy in libido if someone's got a really sexual type and then the other person's more energetic. Perhaps it might seem as though one person wants sex more than the other or something like that, and then obviously that can be a bit of a recipe for disaster and hurt feelings. Like what do you do in that situation, and are there any like types that are more, not incompatible, but more difficult to work together than others?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's definitely something that I work with couples most of the time around. And it starts with, knowing what the shadow expressions of your partner might be. Because once we know that, then you can kind of support each other and not take things so personally. So with me, for example, if I need to change the music because my sensual is being triggered, and my partner is just going to laugh at me and be like, oh, it's just your sensual playing up. Yeah, and we're going to have a giggle around it because we have this shared language, versus if he takes things more personally around like the sexual blueprint and me saying no, then it's about me taking accountability of affirming him that, it's not no in general. It's just no in this moment. Maybe I've had a really emotionally exhausting day. Maybe I, have had something else going on. Maybe something's on my mind, or maybe there's a compromise. So that this in any relationship, it shouldn't be black or white. It's like this compromise of, oh, not this, but what about this instead? And so the first like building block is, knowing what your patterns, each person's patterns are, and then creating some strategies around both of them. So, and each blueprint is going to be very different. One example that I use, so I can be very energetic as well. I grew up, I started yoga when I was 7. I got into tantra quite young. There was those kind of things were very attractive to me at a young age. And so it meant when I was coming into being in relation with someone that was very high in sexual blueprint, my nervous system would short circuit very quickly. And instead of going into this like, oh, well, we're not compatible mode, it was starting to explore together as a team some different tactics to see if there was a way for me to come back into safety in my body and realize that it was safe to be around someone that was a sexual blueprint. And for me, my tactics were, we tried all sorts of things, but breath and coming back into the body, we go like head to head and we just have that moment to reconnect and come back and feel like we're a team again. So it doesn't feel like it's a predator-prey type interaction, which is sometimes, even if it's not the intention of the sexual blueprint, somehow the energetic has been wired to think that it's a predator-prey kind of situation. And so having this moment, whether it's breathing together, sounding together, another way of doing that is having, for some people, if they're sensual and they need to do an emotional release, it might be having your partner lie on top of you for a moment to actually give yourself permission to emotionally release before going into sex and sexuality. So I will say, so if there's an incompatibility, so a lot of the time a sexual blueprint will attract in an energetic or a sensual. So the energetic is going, how do I create safety and presence back in my body again? And that's a question that you can explore for yourself. And the sensual is, how do I create or have a moment of connection or vulnerability? Because often having a deep sense of vulnerability together, or seeing vulnerability in a partner will then open you up to sexual expression. So we call it stacking, in that we might, our first blueprint is our gateway, but we need those needs met before a sexual blueprint can open. And on the other side of that, how does the sexual blueprint ask for maybe what they might need? And so it's not shaming that they might feel that sense of failure or rejection more deeply. It's not shaming that part of them. It's going, how do I reaffirm you that like I still find you sexy, or that I still want to be in partnership with you, or that there's something else, maybe there's a different compromise there that might get that sexual blueprint met. Because the sexual blueprint wants certainty. So maybe it's creating sex labs each week where there's a designated time, or fortnight or month, whatever time span works for you. Maybe there is that certain time where it's about really getting into the physical sexual exploration with one another, so that there's certainty and there's that stability for the sexual blueprint to know that that need's going to be met. There are so many different ways. The last thing that I will say is we can do healing of a blueprint actively or passively. So actively might be going and saying, so for me, for example, I didn't feel safer with a sexual blueprint for a long time. And so me and Owen, like, openly and honestly chatted about that for a bit. You know, there was, you know, I have a background with a lot of partners cheating on me. I had people putting bets on who could sleep with me first in the clubs, because I was seen as this sexual object, you know. So there was so much of this, like, like fear response or protective, like, armor that I was wearing. And so I needed to take self-responsibility of, like, hey, these are the things that I'm going to need to actually start to feel safe. And these are the experiences that I'm going to need first before I can really get into that primal expression. Mm. And so we worked through that actively together as a partnership. Mm. And, you know, we're starting to hear some of these languages of, like, yeah, you know, him just being like openly, like, yeah, I definitely want to fuck you, you know, but I also want to love you and I want to be your committed partner, and having that affirmation over and over again. Mm. So that rather than saying it was like, oh, it's either sex or its relationship, starting to realize that they can coexist in the same partnership. And that's a, like, some people who call it the Madonna whore complex. You know, it's starting to have that safe container where there is someone that you trust to go into that sexual blueprint together. Yeah. The other way that you can do it is passively. And so this can be, as a partnership, focusing on a different blueprint that's maybe not directly relating to your opposites. So I'll use the example of, like, I had a very high energetic. Owen had a very low energetic. I had a very low sexual. Owen had a very high sexual. So we were very, like, polar when we first got together, and we've been together 5 years now. And it wasn't through, there were some conversations around each of them, but we actually had a shared interest in exploring the kink. So it was almost this, like, other side tangent that we got to explore kind of as equals. It wasn't someone was higher or lower. And through that shared experience of going and exploring kink, we were then naturally starting to see that our other blueprints of the sexual was rising in me and the energetic was rising in Owen. So we can, rather than focusing on something head on of, like, we need to fix this or we aren't compatible, it's, well, is there a different area that maybe we want to focus our relationship on for a bit? Yeah.
Excuse this quick interruption. I'm shamelessly seeking reviews and 5-star ratings for the potty because, as I'm sure you've noticed by now, it's pretty fab. And the more people who get to hear it, the more people I can help with it. Reviews and ratings actually do make a big difference to this little independent podcaster. And it's really easy to just quickly show your support by taking that simple act of either leaving 5 stars for the show on Spotify, or even better, writing a written review and leaving 5 stars over on Apple Podcasts. Or if you're a real overachiever, you can do them both. That would be mad. If you're writing a review, though, just be sure to use G-rated words, because despite the fact that this is a podcast about sexuality, words like sex can be censored and your review won't make it through the gates. Lame. Anyway, I would personally recommend doing that right now while you remember, just to get on top of it and let me know you're with me on this journey. Thanks, gang. Enjoy the rest of the epi.
Yeah, beautiful. That would be so much more manageable to kind of ease into it and find that common ground before going for the, you know, the more tricky area of, like, these are two very polar opposite blueprints that we're, you know, wanting to directly work on. I think, like, indirectly working on them gradually is a great plan. And something I will just say, back when you were talking about the just because, like, it really, you know, it resonates with me and it's something I see a lot, is, like, that predator prey dynamic. Obviously, like, women are so, in particular, are so used to being objectified and sexualized. And then what I've noticed with a lot of my friends that are in sex work or dancing is that they start to, you know, form this kind of unhealthy relationship with the sexual blueprint because of it, because they're so often objectified and sexualized, and it becomes not a safe space for them. And on one hand, they want to feel desired and attractive to a partner, but that lack of, I guess, comfortability and safety with the, you know, the sexual robs them of the ability to just enjoy being desired by their partner, because they automatically see it as like, oh, I'm prey, I'm being objectified here. And they can't just enjoy someone wanting to fuck them because they associate it with, like, you know, their work or just society and our culture, you know, seeing women as sexual objects, and they don't want that. Or they, you know, as a lot of people in the feminist activism space also really struggle with that whole Madonna whore thing. So there's no question in that. I just wanted to like insert that because I see that a lot and I have a lot of these conversations with people.
Yeah, absolutely. So common. So common.
So like, is it important? I mean, I feel like I can kind of listen or read about these blueprints and really confidently be like, I think that that one and that one are like my main types. And I think years ago I took the quiz and, you know, that was confirmed. People can take the quiz online. They can obviously intuit or kind of guess what their templates are. But is that kind of enough to identify what your main templates are, or is there a way to like explore your body and intimacy with different kinds of touch and stimulation that will then give you a more embodied experience of like what works for you, what doesn't? Like where should people kind of start with this?
I love that you asked this question, because when we're taking the quiz, or when you're listening to me, you're only listening from the space of the mind and your conditioned patterns and your experiences. So that has a weight to it already. And that's why I am a complete mind body nerd. Like I've studied it for at university for 10 years. So I love this stuff. And I honor that the mind has a lot of wisdom that you need to acknowledge, but the body can also have and give us a lot of cues and a lot of interesting feedback that we can overlook sometimes. And I found this for myself. I had actually done a workshop probably a decade ago now, and it was around different touch styles, not to do with the blueprints, but it was in relation to like elemental touches. Mm-hmm. And I had, because I was only dating women at that point, kind of just seen myself as someone that likes that like light, soft touch. And when we relate that to the blueprints, they all have different touch styles. So it'd be more of that energetic and sensual touch. That's what I always thought that I was and what I needed in sexual relating. And I gave myself permission to just try all these different touch styles in this workshop. And someone scratched me. And this is not even like in a highly aroused state. This was just like experimenting with different touch styles. I got scratched, and I'm not joking. This rush of energy just came over my body. I started giggling. I was like this little cheeky little minx that kind of awakened. And I was like, what is going on? Like, this is not something that I would have requested automatically in a relational dynamic, but I almost needed this, this touch style, this smorgasbord of opportunities to actually figure out what I did or didn't want. And so with that, I will say that each of the different blueprints have different touch styles, and we can do little experiments, whether it's on yourself. So like, self pleasure and trying different touch styles. So very briefly, energetics are going to be more of that very light touch, hovering over the body, eye gazing. And sensual is going to be more of that, like that palm of the hand, forehand, caressing, lying on each other, some more compressive touch or grounding touch, you know, oil massages, things like that. Sexual is going to be more of your genital stimulation. Maybe you want to get toys involved, so vibration. Kink is going to be, your scratching, your impact, your choking, being tied up, or playing with different like role plays, or being told what to do, or maybe being the one that's telling someone else what to do and playing with different games. So actually giving yourself permission in a container to actually see and explore and see how your body responds to these different types of interactions. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, you can do it on a scaling system. You can go, yeah, my body really responded to that. You might want to quantify it, like on a scale of 1 to 5, how arousing was that? Like, oh, wow, that was really arousing. Other people use the traffic light system of, no, didn't like that. Eh, it was all right. Or, yeah, absolutely love that. Like, let's keep trying and exploring that. And then you can start to actually see that, it can change. Maybe you're like, depending on the partner, different touch styles come up. That's why I say different times of the month. You know, there's certain times of the month where I really love that soft, energetic, like, light touch over the neck, or, you know, the like inside of the arms. You know, you've got that really sensitive part of the arm. I sometimes really love that. Sometimes it feels like ants crawling on me and I'm like, fucking get off me. Like, yeah. I want that, like, animalistic, totally. Like, grab me. I don't want the soft stuff. Give me it. Like, you know, so there's different times of the month that I will or won't, or where I'm at in my own personal relationship to myself. There's definitely times where I'm feeling like softer or need more compressive touches of being in my body. So I'm like grounding and not going into my mind. There's other times where I'm like, oh, I love the power of my mind and I want to command someone around the room, you know? So it's actually having checkpoints. And me and Owen, we do like sex labs. So we're still to this day collecting information around how our bodies respond in different circumstances. So it might be if you're in a partnership, you know, maybe having up to you once a week, once a fortnight, once a month, these kind of games or these self-exploration or partnership exploration moments where it's about getting feedback from one another without taking it personally. Because I will say sometimes like giving each other feedback on what touch styles you do or don't like in the moment, right in the heat of having like sex or making love, is sometimes not always the easiest or best way to give each other feedback. You know, so it is about sometimes creating these containers where both parties know that they're going to be giving each other feedback. They can actually be really, really beautiful, really expansive. So yes, I will say that's a long-winded answer to say, yes, there's an intellectual or a mind-based and there's a body-based way of exploring the blueprints and what your body may or may not want.
Mm, awesome. Yeah, something that I just feel like mentioning is if, you know, if people are in a relationship or they're looking into dating someone and they're recognizing that they you know, might sit on opposite ends of the spectrum or have really different blueprints, same with love languages, same with any of these things, don't think of it as like, oh, we're incompatible, it's just going to be harder for us. Think of it as an opportunity to actually get to learn and explore in realms that, you know, you might not have naturally happened across yourself. Because if you were the exact same blueprint, that's easy and comfortable and nice and great, but also it means that you're probably pigeonholing your, you know, yourself in just this one kind of more limited expression of sexuality, and that could get a little bit boring and mean that you become complacent rather than when you actually have to work at it and have communication around it and have sex labs and experiment and explore and really embrace that beginner mindset of information gathering and curiosity and learning. Like, I see that as such an opportunity and not necessarily a negative thing that's like, oh shit, we're just incompatible, it's just always going to be harder. You know, it actually means that you're probably going to, yeah, cultivate a more curious and conscious and intentional approach to making love, to relating to intimacy, and learn a lot more about yourself in the process through being open to exploring things that you're, you know, you're not normally as interested in, but maybe your partner's really into. And then because they're really into it, it opens up this gateway for you to experience it through their lens and maybe be more excited about it and maybe step outside of your conditioning that, you know, maybe, for example, as a woman, like you're more sensual and energetic and that's kind of the way to be and that's the natural way to be and that makes sense because you're naturally more empathetic and more sort of sensitive. And it's kind of just like an opportunity to break out of that mold and try new shit, basically.
Yeah, and you get to like fall in love with so many different iterations of each other. You know, you can be dating like 10 people, but within one person, which is such a beautiful thing to like keep learning and loving each other in different expressions. It's, yeah.
Awesome.
It's a beautiful thing.
And love it. Yeah. All right. Well, we've run out of time, but before we wrap up, do you have a TMI story for us, Jay?
Have you had any recent ones just to spark like spark my thoughts?
I think the last interview I did was with a friend of mine who was talking about going to the gay sauna sex party nights. And just how often consent was totally ignored and having his dick grabbed in the shower while his eyes were closed and he was like washing his hair. And so it doesn't have to be something as awful as that. But
no, yeah, I know. But that did stem something for me, which is like I have the privilege of being able to tour with my performance group. And it doesn't mean my partner gets to dress up in drag. And it's very interesting to watch how, and I dress up as like, a man. Sometimes I can go into drag king, stars. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting to watch how that almost gives automatic permission if a man's dressing in woman's clothes for other women to grab inappropriately. And yeah, and it's just more a reflection point of like, if we as women want to be treated in a certain way, we kind of need to also like show that to men that are wanting to explore cross-dressing, because it doesn't necessarily mean anything about their sexuality either.
Oh my God, that's wild that you use that as a story, because this episode from – it actually just came out this week, which will be last week when this comes out. My friend Matt was saying that when he dresses in skirts and more like feminine clothing, he notices that he gets treated completely differently. And dudes, he like, because he's quite obviously gay, and so maybe, I mean, he didn't mention whether women treated him differently or not, but his story was like, I noticed that I get groped more, men treat me totally differently, and he's like, I get like a distinct feeling of being a woman because people, I don't know, it's almost like the feminine clothing just automatically gives them permission to like treat me like a lesser and like a lesser being that's not equal, that's not as deserving of respect and having boundaries and body autonomy. And, you know, they feel more sexually entitled to my body when I dress more like a woman. And he was like, it's so fucking fascinating. Yeah, so that's crazy because you've just given like another example of that, although like the predatory women. Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah. So many possibilities.
Wow. Hey, me again. If you'd like to support the potty and you've already given it 5 stars on whatever platform you're listening on, I want to mention that you can buy some really dope merch from the website and get yourself a Labia Lounge tote, tee, togs. Yep, you heard that right. I even have Labia Lounge bathers. Or a cute fanny pack if that'd blow your hair back. So if fashion isn't your passion, though, you can donate to my Buy Me a Coffee donation page, which is actually called Buy Me a Soy Chai Latte, because I'll be the first to admit I'm a bit of a Melbourne cafe tosser like that. And yes, that is my coffee order. You can do a once-off donation or an ongoing membership and sponsor me for as little as 3 fat ones a month. And I also offer one-on-one coaching and online courses that'll help you level up your sex life and relationship with yourself and others in a really big way. So every bit helps because it ain't cheap to put out a sweet podcast into the world every week out of my own pocket. So I will be undyingly grateful if you support me and my biz financially in any of these ways. And if you like, I'll even give you a mental BJ with my mind from the lounge itself. Saucy. I'll pop the links in the show notes. Thank you. Later. Well, thank you so much, my dear. Is there anything you want to give a little plug or a shout out to in terms of your work and what you're up to next? I'll pop the links in the show notes, obviously.
Yeah, I've actually just launched my new program. So this is more like stepping into like one-on-one mentorship. Like I love the group dynamics, and I think we heal a lot by having women come together. But there's a real reclamation for that, which is the name of the program, where when you ask for someone to mentor you in a particular direction, whether it's reclaiming sexuality, I also coach people within creating new workshops or series or businesses that they, you know, really want to step into. I work around feminine archetypes and dance, all sorts of things. So yeah, feel free to go have a look on my Instagram page and reach out. I do 15-minute calls where you can actually just have a chat and see if like I'm the right fit for you in any of those kind of spaces to expand or reclaim a part of yourself.
Beauty. All right. Rock on. Thanks so much.
Pleasure, my love.
And that's it, darling hearts. Thank you for stopping by the Labia Lounge. Your bum groove in the couch will be right where you left it, just waiting for you to sink back in for some more double L action next time. And in the meantime, if you'd be a dear and subscribe, share this episode, or leave a review on iTunes, then you can pat yourself on the snatch, because that, my dear, is a downright act of sex-positive feminist activism. And you'd be supporting my vision to educate, empower, demystify, and destigmatize with this here podcast. Also, I'm always open to feedback, topic ideas that you'd love to hear covered, or guest suggestions. So feel free to get in touch via my website at freyagraph.com or say hey over on Insta. My handle is freya_graph_ymt, and I seriously hope you're following me on there, because damn, we have fun. We have fun. Anyway, later, labial legends. I'll see you next time.